Hi, thank you for tuning in, and it's an honor to connect with you. I'm your host, Sorhan, and in this episode, I'm going to talk about the concept called the shadow self, which in recent years has become a very popular topic in the self-discovery workshops around the globe. I will also fully explain in detail what shadow work is about so that there is no confusion around its purpose. There are many pieces to the concept of shadow work, which we will get into, but at its core, shadow work is about dissecting or shining light and becoming aware of those uncomfortable, taboo, and hidden planes of our human nature that, as a society or on an individual level, we have chosen to either reject or repress, or in some cases even deny their existence. The problem is that these so-called taboo shadows of our psyche don't willingly and consciously reveal themselves. After many years of denial of their existence, they sit in the deep parts of our subconscious, and in certain situations, they express themselves when we're not paying attention. This has the potential to stunt our growth, our maturity, and purpose in life, and creates problems with our relationships with ourselves and others. If you're like most people, you probably have a decent idea about your personal code you choose to follow that dictates whether you're being a good person. But what if you're wrong? What if much of what you've come to believe about yourself, your morality, and your code of ethics is not an accurate reflection of who you truly are? What if this pursuit of the idealized self is nothing but a fantasy that is constantly covering and rejecting your true self? For example, have you ever asked yourself, why do I keep attracting certain kinds of people and situations into my life that trigger different parts of me? It could be your dating life, and you keep attracting the same type of people into your dating life, and the same problems continue to arise. Or have you ever done something really out of line on an impulse, and later you felt bad about and ask yourself, why the heck did I do that? It's that why question that we want to focus on today that indicates the presence of a different person, like a shadow, that is beneath your carefully constructed personality. Ultimately, in our inevitable path to self-awareness and self-discovery, we want to be able to explore all aspects of ourselves so that nothing is left lurking in those dark spaces of our psyche. So with that brief introduction, let's talk about the history behind this concept, where it comes from, and dissect why we're seeing a rise in its popularity in the recent transitional stages of our culture, which I don't think is a coincidence. We will then get into more details of different shadow work techniques that you can apply to your own life so that you can become a more actualized human being. Awesome. Now we'd like to read a direct quote from the person who coined the term. His name is Carl Jung. He was a psychiatrist and a psychoanalyst who combined mythology, spirituality, philosophy, and psychoanalysis to understand and transform the lives of many people to this day. He said, "A shadow is a moral problem that challenges the whole ego personality, for no one can become conscious of the shadow without considerable moral effort. To become conscious of it involves recognizing the dark aspects of the personality as present and real. This act is an essential condition for any kind of self-knowledge." The path to self-discovery and awakening is very hard, and it takes a considerable amount of courage and effort. Just reading a book on spirituality like The Power of Now by Eckhart Tolle or Power vs. Force by David Hawkins and saying, I understand spirituality and I have to focus on the light and ignore the inner demons, that's not true awakening and true self-discovery. There is a sharp distinction between the true human nature that is within all of us and this idealized self that we aim towards in our culture. And there's an issue of a split between the two because it leads to a perpetual state of self-rejection. This is a concept that many spiritual teachings in the past had focused on, but in the 1960s and 70s and 80s, there was a movement in the West to take the best spiritual teachings and cross-reference them. That resulted, of course, in diluting spirituality, which we see today. This New Age movement have always been to rush people towards the light and to avoid the dark and to avoid effort. And as a result, people end up fusing their psychological blocks to spiritual teachings, and they unknowingly use these teachings to escape the reality of the physical dimension, which includes their physical body and their human nature. And they tell themselves, oh, I don't have to go there, thank God. I don't have to examine my guilt and shame and these feelings around my sexuality, let's say, or my resistance to being a responsible person in this physical world. This becomes part of the idealized self, and it separates you from your human nature, so-called the lower self. There is an unrelenting need in a civilized culture such as ours for people to face the truth within ourselves instead of projecting our shadows and pointing fingers to feel virtuous. And to be clear, shadow work is not about being directed by our dark side. Hate, anger, jealousy, shame, fear, these are emotions that will direct us if we're constantly in the business of rejecting them. And the danger is that The more you repress the dark side of you and deny it and forget their existence, the more they are susceptible to get triggered by others in certain situations. Ironically, this need to avoid our human nature and suppress the things that make us or other people uncomfortable undermines our ability to confront and either heal or integrate them into our lives. If this failure to heal is bad for us as an individual, you can think about it in terms of masses. The effects of that failure on a mass scale can be really catastrophic. So now that we have a better understanding of the importance of shadow work, let's begin talking about shadow integration. As we mentioned earlier, the more we suppress certain parts of our human nature, the more we're susceptible to those parts exploding in certain situations when we're not paying attention, which could be really catastrophic to us and to other people around us. These shadow aspects of our psyche include aggressive impulses, taboo images, shameful experiences, immoral urges, fears, irrational wishes, unacceptable sexual desires that many of us think about. And rather than confronting them and healing them, we pretend that they don't exist. The interesting part about this is that the more we suppress this part of ourselves, the more we get triggered when we see it in other people. What triggers you in others exists in you, or as Terence once put it, nothing human is foreign to me. The negative side effect of this is that we vilify the people around us, including our family members, including our loved ones, the people around us. We vilify them because we don't think that the same experiences that they're having and the same actions that they're taking is rooted in something that also exists in us. This recognition has three benefits for us. The first one is that the more we recognize that what exists in other people also exists in us, their actions will trigger us a lot less. Things that don't trigger us as much don't become a self-fulfilling prophecy, and we will attract less triggering situations and people into our lives. The second benefit of this is that when you actualize this recognition that what exists in you also exists in other people and vice versa, you become a lot more compassionate towards human nature and therefore the people you're surrounded with. And this allows you to become more compassionate with the solutions that you come up with during the face of chaos with other people. Being compassionate does not mean to ignore your problems or pretend that they don't exist. That's actually not compassion, that is ignorance. Being compassionate means to come up with win-win solutions between you and other people. The third reason why this is beneficial is when we recognize that nothing human is foreign to us and every evil and monstrous faculty that other human beings have also exists in us, we become fearless towards them. To integrate your shadow side, you could do the following writing exercise. 1. Write out a list of qualities you most dislike in other people. The more evil they seem to you, the better. 2. Write out a list of qualities you most dislike in family members. 3. Notice how any of these qualities seem to show up in your primary relationships, such as close friendships, love relationships, and important work colleagues. 4. Finally, and this is an important step, notice how many of these qualities can be found in yourself, even if only they are very subtle and only happen in your psyche. For example, if you don't like weakness in other people, is there some part of yourself that you suspect or secretly know can be weak in a given situation, and so forth. The purpose of this isn't to let others repeat their bad behavior. It's really just about getting to know yourself deeply and to acknowledge your human nature, which leads to greater empowerment and freedom. The second and I think the most effective way to do shadow work is to do it with a group of people. The basis of shadow work is confession, which is most effective when we confess not just to ourselves, but to other people. It is not the type of confession that is often motivated by guilt and shame. The confession that I'm talking about here is more about dropping defensiveness and pride. When we go beyond defensiveness and pride, we can see the ways in which we have contributed to the problem by our own shortcomings, by being impatient, intolerant, mean, vengeful, being weak, compliant, overly negative, complaining too much. These things could subconsciously be happening, and by tuning into them, by realizing them and owning them, we begin to become more conscious and better problem solvers. Confessions also become more potent when we see the ways in which we are this way, not just how we were in the past. Your mind will try to trick you by telling you that now you're beyond these dark tendencies, that I used to be this way, and so on. In reality, your true human nature cannot be rooted out of your personality. If you do believe this is possible, more than likely it's due to the lack of a constant mirror in your life that has tricked you into believing that you are not this way anymore. Rather, we must take full ownership of these tendencies. When you do confess your dark or negative tendencies to other people, such as being impatient or being weak sometimes, you don't just tell people, I am impatient sometimes, or I am a weak person in certain situations. Saying that would absolutely help you, but what's more important is tuning into what it means to be weak, tuning into what it means to be impatient and experiencing it and labeling it correctly and becoming conscious of it with self-compassion and no self-condemnation. When you become conscious of these psychological tendencies, they lose power over you. This full acceptance in shadow work is known as ownership. These negative tendencies are not something separate from us. It is us. It just waits, sometimes patiently and sometimes impatiently, and sometimes destructively, for us to see that point. The result of this journey is complete self-acceptance and self-compassion and a reduction in hostility towards ourselves and towards others. The third point I want to make about shadow work has to do with our negative states and emotions and the pain that comes with resisting these emotions. Emotions such as fear, anger, shame, guilt, grief are emotional states that we usually try to avoid. Many people use drugs such as alcohol to suppress fear, or nicotine to suppress anger, or they smoke pot to suppress depression or sorrow. These emotions, when suppressed long enough, take surface during times of boredom. And so we turn into pleasureful activities like watching television, playing video games, and doing anything we possibly can to avoid experiencing them. This avoidance enables us to disconnect from our pain, which keeps us wounded. This pain is not something to be brushed away or suppressed, because when a person is not in touch with their pain, they can't take a step towards transforming it. There is this mainstream prejudice in our culture against negative states, and the consequences of avoiding these states is that you unintentionally hinder your growth, maturity, and your purpose in life. All emotions, whether positive or negative, are solutions our ancestors passed down to us generation after generation that contain a wealth of information that we often don't tap into. Imagine if we don't shy away from anger, guilt, or boredom just because they feel bad. Imagine withstanding the discomforts of those feelings and to even draw something positive out of them. And you're probably asking, well, why would I want to do that? Pain hurts. I'd rather be happy. Any athlete would tell you that this stress tolerance is really important in life, not just because it makes you a happy camper, but also because it makes you stronger, wiser, mentally agile, and most importantly, happier in a more resilient and more durable way. In our culture, we focus so much on positive states as the only way to reach wholeness. The truth is, all states are important. Every emotion is useful, even the ones we think of as negative, including the painful ones. Yet we have this fear towards these negative states because we don't know who we would become if we tune into them. For example, with anger, most of us think that if we tune into it, it's going to turn into an overwhelming rage that leads to violence. Or with feelings of guilt or shame, a lot of us avoid them because we think that it's going to turn into a full-on depression and lack of self-love. Research shows that only rarely tuning into our negative emotions turn into something extreme. For example, anger tends to bubble up when you perceive an infringement of your rights as a person. It steers you to defend yourself and those you care about and to maintain healthy boundaries. Similarly, a lot of us sometimes suppress feedback from our environment because embarrassment is sometimes an early warning sign of humiliation and shame. Yet more often, slight shame is a signal that we've made a small mistake and that a small correction is required. The emotion shame detects feedback from your environment. By not resisting shame, we can tune into a wealth of information that could change us for the better. Even guilt is not as awful as you might guess. It's a signal that you're violating your own moral code, and you either have to change your moral code or stop breaking them. All psychological states have some adaptive advantages. Imagine a shameless, guiltless, angerless society. How would our lives turn out without these emotions? So rather than steering yourself towards a single feeling state, I urge you to consider the usefulness of many. By flipping back and forth between the positive and the negative states, we can achieve balance and a sense of wholeness. People who are comfortable with using both positive and negative states and draw from the full range of human emotions are the healthiest and often the most successful. A practical way to implement these negative emotions into your life and change your relationship with them is to do a silence retreat. You could do this at your own apartment. You could lock yourself inside your bathroom for an entire day with a notebook and a pen. Cut out all electronics or anything that could distract you. Then begin with a list of negative emotions and tune into them and listen to what they have to say. By letting shame rise up, you begin noticing the things you should be working on that you have been avoiding for a long time. You begin noticing how you've been mistreating your loved ones, the character flaws that need work, and are stopping you from reaching the next levels in your life. By letting guilt rise up, you begin noticing what your moral code is and how you've been breaking them. Over the last few decades, through the works of people like Martin Seligman, the father of positive psychology in America, positive psychology has been transformed from just a reminder that positive experiences are important to it becoming a religious act that everybody must follow, that becoming positive and staying positive is the way to live life. Yet, these often unwanted and negative emotions and experiences end up shaping some of the most memorable and inspiring experiences of our lives. Awesome. I hope that this recording has encouraged you guys to look into the development of the shadow and the persona, and to understand the benefit of resolving these internal conflicts that we constantly have and we ignore, because the more we ignore them, the more we leave behind a sense of insecurity and disturbance that is easily triggered by other people. We all have qualities, capacities that do not harmonize with the collective values of our culture. By suppressing them, they become part of our shadow, the dark region of our personality, which is unknown and unrecognized with our idealized self, this persona, this conscious self that we habitually and constantly display to the world until we forget who we truly are. There is always a repression of the shadow and an over-identification with the idealized persona that we need to become aware of and work with to become whole. The three methods of writing down the qualities in other people that trigger you and admitting the same qualities in yourself, joining groups and confessing those negative qualities in you that you have been suppressing and owning them, and lastly, staying in silence and tuning into your negative emotions and listening to their feedback, are courageous steps that you can take to integrate your shadow into your life. People who have full ownership of their shadow self are more trustworthy, and they're also capable of warmth and creative power that truly contribute to the growth of humanity. As the saying goes, if you want to change a world, begin with yourself. It's a lot harder but more effective than pointing fingers. Lastly, I would like to leave you with a quote by a French philosopher called La Rochefoucauld. No man deserves to be praised for his goodness unless he has the strength of character to be wicked. All other goodness is generally nothing but indolence or impotence of will. Or to paraphrase, it's much better to be a restrained monster than to be a well-behaved coward. With that being said, if you're interested in this topic and would like to integrate shadow work into your life, you could reach out to us via social media or by using our contact information on our website. And in addition, I highly recommend reading books such as The Upside of Your Dark Side by Todd Kashdan and The Way of the Conscious Warrior by Phil Misselberger. To end, if you found any value, I would love for you to subscribe to the podcast, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and please send us any critical feedback so we can get better. With that, thank you for tuning in, and as always, stay curious, my friends.